Bob Prince stopped the world at Davos talking about the challenges of the lower bound. It ain't working. I mean, Catherine Burton's essay the other day, your major all-weather fund, it's single-digit returns and some selected losses as well. It's just not working. Can risk parity strategies work at the lower bound?
You know, bonds certainly are not providing the level of return or the level of diversification they have had for the last couple of decades. That's obvious to everybody. But what all weather is all about is really getting smart diversification and figuring out how to get betas in different environments, whether you're in a rising or falling growth environment, a rising or falling inflation environment. And so what the team at Bridgemarq has been doing for the last couple of years, but really obviously focusing very much on over this past year, is thinking what other combinations of assets can we put in a portfolio that are going to achieve that same balance? And the good news is I think there are plenty of ways to do it. So it's not saying dump all your bonds, absolutely. It's saying make sure you have that diversification and balance, and things like inflation-linked bonds, things like looking at a basket of global, still bonds, things like gold, things like looking at different types of equities that are going to have more stable cash flows. There are ways you can continue to achieve that balance. So we have to be creative. But in a world where interest rates are, you know, converging around zero, but it's still absolutely possible to achieve the aims of all weather.
Rebecca, what I find fascinating here around the core Bridgewater theme that Dalio invented of return equals cash plus a beta plus alpha. Great. I mean, I get the foundational idea, but things have changed. Now, that formula is founded on full faith and credit bonds is an anchor to the mathematics. Your new strategies don't have that full faith and credit anchor, do they?
Oh, yeah, sure they do. I mean, you're still anchoring to cash. You're still anchoring to what are the risk premia for different asset classes and kind of adding those up together and then figuring out how much risk you want to have in each. So I think that basic principle is still in place. You just have to think about that bond portion of your portfolio differently than the past. So I think it's not as big a deal, perhaps, as you're suggesting.
Rebecca, good morning from London. Talk to me a little bit about correlations. I mean, we've spent a fair amount of time also looking at the rally in August to try and figure out what these correlations mean, whether they were really any different to what we saw after, you know, the dot-com bubble burst. What can you tell us about what it will take to have correlations that go back to a bit more normality?
Well, I understand what you're saying about August and even in September with some of the moves we've seen in the markets. But I think if we take a step back, we are seeing a lot of differentiation still in the markets this year, especially around the pandemic. You know, between how different countries have handled the virus, and Francine, you in London, you're seeing one version of that. We're seeing a different version in the U.S. You have some countries like China doing an amazing job, other countries like Mexico, not so much. So you have differentiation in the virus control. You have differentiation in the policy response. So the U.S., you know, huge monetary and fiscal easing very quickly. Other countries doing a lot less or maybe later. So that's a second factor. And then the third factor, and you just touched on this with the bank stocks in Europe, is the makeup of the economy and the makeup of those markets. And when you put those three things together, what I think you are seeing is a lot of differentiation in how the markets are moving year to date in terms of equity returns, a country and currency returns as well. A country like Mexico versus a country like China, you're getting very, very different performance. So while I hear you on what you're saying about recent correlations, I think if you can take a slightly wider lens on that question, what you're seeing from the pandemic, as horrible as it is that it is providing investors with some pretty good opportunities for diversification in portfolios that comes from lower correlations because of these three factors, the virus, the policy response, and then the makeup of the economy. An economy that's heavily service-oriented, tourism-oriented, global trade-oriented is obviously going to be hit a lot differently than a country where it's more focused on goods, more focused inward domestically.
And Rebecca, one of the other things that we've been trying to figure out is, of course, you know, these deflationary pressures that a lot of central banks are worried around the world about, including the Fed. Is there really a danger that a lot of our Western democracies and Western economies are becoming much more like Japan? And what has Japan taught us in how to deal with it?
Oh, I love that you asked that question. Tom and I share this. Francine, I don't know you well enough to know if you're part of the club, but history is so much fun to study and understand, because while it doesn't predict the future, it definitely informs your view on the future. And Japan is such a great case study right now. As you think about what Japan tried to do when Abe came to office in the end of 2012, you know, early 13, he launched Abenomics. They raised the inflation target. They increased asset purchases. They did everything you would want to do to try to generate some inflation. But what they failed to do in 2014 is continue with the fiscal easing to support the monetary policy. So when they started tightening fiscally, you had fiscal and monetary policy at odds, and that undermined their goal. And you saw inflation start to come back down. So what we're seeing now in the world, and I think this is such an important thing for your listeners and viewers to understand, is we've really moved into a new era, almost a new paradigm is what we're calling it. In that monetary policy, the way we grew up with it, it doesn't work anymore. You know, the ammunition for central banks just to raise and lower interest rates, especially lowering interest rates, that's pretty much behind us. It's been behind us for a while. That's why they adopted asset purchases, quantitative easing. But even now, that's not doing the trick. Quantitative easing is going to reflate equities, reflate financial assets, but it doesn't get money into the hands of the people who need it. So now you're in this world where you have to have more coordinated fiscal and monetary policy. So what the Fed's doing to try to avoid becoming Japan, having entrenched low inflation or deflation, God help us, what they're trying to do is be aggressive, pushing up this the interpretation of its mandate to try to get higher inflation, keep rates at zero at least till 2024. But that's only going to work if they have fiscal policy supporting them. And so that's what I think we need to watch really carefully right now. Is the fiscal policy going to be there to go hand in hand with the monetary policy?